Yes, well, there we have it. Midweek Drive Morning Edition continues. Weather today, highs of 16 degrees centigrade, lows of 9 degrees centigrade, and a mix of sunny periods and a few light showers. Clearly, the wondrous variety of life is what it's all about. Isn't that right, writer Ian Lennox?
I hope so.
Precisely. As we said to Arthur Mackenzie, we didn't have the heart to feature Old Wore Out Cowboys, the Cameron Tilbury track for Your Good Self, Ian, so we gave it to Arthur instead because we felt he had sufficient shoulders to bear the stress and strain of yet another defeat for Newcastle United last night.
Thank you.
I thought so. Well, you see, obviously you wanted to come out in sympathy with Sunderland. Wasn't that a cracking result? 4-1, I seem to recall. But
well,
still,
they won the second half, Sunderland, at least.
Exactly.
I think half the Man City players are still in the dressing room.
Yeah, well, there we are, you see. We thought we'd just chill out from that point of view. Anyway, how are you?
They had to take their own deck chairs away afterwards after the game, apparently.
Well, exactly. Ian, from your own point of view, I gather you've been checking out some of the Rugby World Cup with Arthur. How's it been going?
Yes, well, Arthur knows a lot more about rugby than I do. He was a very good rugby player, actually. But I really enjoyed the Japan South Africa game. I only got the second half of it. It was strange because I sort of switched channels, and West Ham were beating Man City. I think it was 2-0.
Is there somebody on the line? Is somebody actually trying to get through to you on that? Yeah. Do they not realise you're on the radio at present? For goodness' sake!
Like to stake, so I can when Newcastle eventually lose to Sheffield Wednesday, I can have some riposte.
Yeah, precisely.
But anyway, no, I watch more of the Japanese game, and it was incredible. You felt that it was a game that's going to change rugby for the next year or so because there's an emergence of a new strong national side.
And yet they lost to Scotland.
Yeah, but they played 4 days afterwards, you know.
Well, that was the official line.
It's not coincidental that Scotland ran in some tries in the second half, the last 25 minutes of the game.
Yeah, and is it that? Because I mean, I was often thinking, was it just a mental thing where they were hearing that they were so exhausted they couldn't possibly put in the same sort of task as they did against South Africa?
I imagine that would be part of it. But when you saw the way they played, they didn't play with quite the same precision. They made more errors, and they got into the Scotland 25 or 22 meters is it now? On a number of occasions, you know, and didn't score, didn't get the points on the board. And once you do that at the national level, you're finished. Once you get the 25, you've got to have a high return on points.
So
and they didn't do that.
Arthur's very important point that he actually made about concussion and the recent panorama survey of concussion and so on. Is that something which you worry about, or is it a case of, no, it's just nonsense?
Not at my age, I don't, but I imagine, yes, it's obviously a concern for the sport. When did rugby turn professional? It was in the 1990s, wasn't it? And Steve Black, who was a fitness coach at the Falklands at the time, told me that the professional players had put on average, I think, 1.5 stones in weight, and it was muscle they put on. And, they're ploughing into each other now. I just dread to think what Johnny Wilkinson's shoulders must be, joints must be like when he approaches 50. Because he tackled like a horse. He was knocking back players 4 or 5 stones heavier than himself, and he couldn't reach that was by charging into them. So I don't know. It is a very physical game, and I don't think the real, what people fear might be happening now, it can't be proved for another 10 or so years, I wouldn't have thought, until, as far as arthritis and stuff like that's concerned. And, it's a rough game. I don't know why they all don't wear caps, padded caps myself.
Changing the topic slightly, Arthur. Ian. He gets the name right. Very strange. Clearly, if Ian, you'd had a chance to listen live, or indeed you want to download the podcast, which will be up shortly after the programme's wrapped today, you would have heard Arthur saying he's a great writer, a superb writer, and the shock of the morning, Jessica has completely finished Gentlemen and Players.
I can retire now.
Yeah, you see, it's done. Thoroughly enjoyed it. So across the generations, Gentlemen and Players, the last but one text of the producer has now been sufficiently read, and you doubted her. You doubted her, Ian. You said she would have been with us on the part of the programme, but she's off doing her university work now, so there we are.
Well, tell her I apologise.
Listen to it herself.
Please give me a good review on Amazon.
Yeah, well, There we are. That's clearly the next stage. In a few moments, we'll be talking hopefully to Damien, who's a musician with a band called the Senton Bombs, who are, I think, probably very into heavy metal, certainly allowing for the sound of their fantastic tune Mainstream. It's certainly guaranteed to wake you up. What will you be doing for the rest of the day, Ian Lennox?
I'm going to do some decorating the house. I was away when I was in Canada. I had the house rewired, and there's various scars on the wall.
Yeah,
as a consequence. So I actually painted a good part of the house, the downstairs house, yesterday with emulsion. And then I was listening to the Newcastle game, and I got so bored with it. Incidentally, I think I had one weak shot on goal the whole game against a reserve team.
I mean, it's nice to see that Steve McLaren's record with sides in the Premiership is continuing, obviously.
He's certainly consistent. Yeah. But anyway, I got so bored with it, I went actually and watched to see if the paint was drying. And that's literally true. I went out and I thought, oh, dear me. I couldn't say more than this.
Even when you were a writer on the Guardian newspaper in Manchester, they used to say, the one thing about Ian, you know that he's literally always telling the truth.
I wasn't on the Guardian, I was on the Daily Mail, which was the same office. It was actually the same office as the Guardian. No, it wasn't. Yes, it was.
That could have been led to a lot of fun times, I would have thought, in terms of scoops and such like. But that's for another time.
Manchester, in those days, is a wonderful place to be. It's really funny.
Of course, it still is, but mostly around the Etihad Stadium. Anyway, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have, thank you.
And will you be returning next week? We might have to change your time again, because clearly with Jessica and Emma both having to head off into all this sequence here, you know, clearly we need to just readdress that so you can quiz Jessica in person about that.
I wouldn't dare, I don't think.
I don't know. Don't underestimate the New Zealanders who live in the Isle of Man. That's our official one. Do not underestimate the New Zealanders.
I haven't heard that expression before.
Yeah, well, you can use it in your next phrase, in your next text, basically. Yeah. You can look to it.
Incidentally, Arthur, you know, was I don't know if you've got time, but he's probably the best writer in the Northeast and the best writer in my street.
You see,
this
is the wonderful thing. You see, you put Arthur before the news, yourself after after the news, and it's like a Lennox McKenzie loving. This is why, Ian, I've said you should forget Steve Black and Steve McLaren, and quite simply, you should go for that Newcastle United job. They're never going to succeed until you actually sort of say it's going to be McKenzie and Lennox running the roost, lads. It's amazing that. I take it you'll return, though.
Oh, indeed, yes.
Yay!
The Rock Train, leaving the station every other Thursday, 8 till 10, bringing you the best local and international bands from the world of rock and metal. The Rock Train, no tracks are too heavy.
Which kind of makes an insertion into the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today, because we are about to feature a tremendously wonderful, talented hard rock band. It's the Senton Bombs. Specifically, we're speaking to ace musician with the Senton Bombs, Damien. Good morning, Damien. How are you?
Good morning, I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Fantastic to touch base with your good self, and it's good to see that you're nice and awake and bright and sparky at 12 and a half minutes past 9 o'clock on a Lincolnshire morning. Genius stuff there.
I'm sat here with a coffee.
Yeah, well, it's always good. Yeah. The Senton Bombs, quite literally, set to go mainstream. The single is released on the 2nd of October. We're going to hear it in a few moments, but you're also on tour doing a whole stack of things. Share with us the tale of the Senton Bombs. You've produced 4 albums, the fourth one, Vendetta, is coming along very, very shortly, and it just seems as though Blackpool and Sunderland and London are really, really blessed because you're going to be performing there.
We just completed our album, so obviously we've got the new single on release. The album is due for release at some point in 2016. We've not quite set a date yet. The initial plan is obviously just sort of do a single, select like a strong song from it, and just, you know, start to build up a bit. And following that, we're doing like 3 release dates, obviously one in our hometown in Blackpool, one up in Sunderland, then we're going to have like a little release party down in London, because we've been doing a lot of work down in London this year and building up a bit of a fan base down there, so we're probably going to give one down there a shot. And then obviously following those dates, we're in Holland from the 14th for 5 days, and then we go to Germany in November as well. We've got a few little gigs like in between the tour dates. So busy couple of months for us.
I was going to ask about Blackpool because Blackpool obviously hosted recently a science fiction event with our colleagues at Starburst magazine and so on. It was an interesting juxtaposition there, Blackpool, Sunderland and London. But with the Lancashire connection, you made it quite clear. So the corner flag in Sunderland, that's October 3rd. The bootleg social on October 2nd in Blackpool. And, of course, the day after you've done Sunderland, it's the Fighting Cocks in London on October the 4th.
Yeah, that's correct. And they're the three ones we'll be launching it, and we're going to have, it's going to be doing a limited edition physical, so we've pressed around about 250 copies. It's all going to be like limited edition, and then the digital release comes out via Holier Than Thou Records on the 23rd of November. So we're just trying to do like a little sort of physical limited edition thing, really, just for like the hardcore fans, if you will, people who will come to the shows and they can get something, you know, a little bit special before we actually release it.
You're just too good to them, Damien. Just too good to them, honestly. Yeah. You know? I mean, in the words of Steve Swift from Power Play magazine, rough charm and grime galore, somewhat of a brilliance. You know, Alan Holloway for Rocktopia, a mix of the Ramones and the Almighty with a fair dash of Guns N' Roses when they were good, a quality of slice of hard rock that is gritty yet melodic. As I say, it's a wake-up number. Stay with us, because we're going to actually sort of come back to you after we have released the phenomenon, if that's... phenomenon is exactly the right word. The Scent and Bombs and Mainstream on Siren FM. Days to go before Mainstream is officially released, and the fantastic Damien Cage on guitar and backing with us now. Damien, a phenomenon, I think, a phenomenon of musical sound. Got to ask the question,
Thank you.
Damien. Was it at all based on the classic Row, Row, Row Your Boat, Gently Down the Stream, Merrily, 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 Life is But a Dream? Is that at all connected with Mainstream, or am I way off base there?
No, you're very, very close there, and you're the first person to get it. Basically, what the song's is, it's challenging mass media manipulation, and we've tried to sort of play on the idea of, in like almost like a rock lullaby, how you would sing a lullaby to your child to get them to sleep, and that's what the mainstream media are doing to the mass population with, like, you know, we're selling whatever it is their narrative and their agenda to us, whatever that may be, or however you want to take that, really, to be honest. But yeah, you're pretty much spot on there.
It's not just a rock band, it's a deep exercise in existential philosophy as well. It's fantastic. The Scent and Bombs.
Well, you know, we try.
Name checks, obviously, to vocals and bass, Joey Klass, of course, who's in there.
Yes.
Johnny Gibbons on guitar and Scott Mason on drums.
That's great.
Always got to keep the rest of the band happy. I mean, they all know that basically without yourself, Damien, the whole thing would fall to bits. So yeah, it's important that the rest of the names are sort of through there. How did you get together? Share with us a little bit of the history of the Scent and Bombs.
It's pretty much Joey the singer. We've just been long-time friends, known each other since we were 4 years old, been best friends for years. And then we decided one day we're gonna start a band in my garage, and we did that with my younger brother, who's not in the band anymore, and another lad called Ronnie Bomb, who is our producer now. And that's pretty much just how it started out, just like a little bit of fun. And we've been going for quite a few years in different forms and stuff, but I think it's always been probably the friendship between myself and the singer that sort of kept the band together, really, through, you know, difficult periods and when we've lost members and other members have joined. And then things really started to take off for us in 2013 when we released Chapter Zero, and it was, you know, we got fantastic reviews and started getting bigger gigs, and we were like, wow, you know what I mean? We never really thought this would happen, which kind of sort of fueled the fire to start doing a lot more with it, really, to be honest. You know, because a lot of bands tend not to go as long as we have. They tend to sort of, you know, different, you know, they'll split up and join other bands and stuff like that. But we just seem to kept it going.
and keep that magic going all the way. And the magic, of course, as we said, happening on October the 2nd in Blackpool at the Bootleg Social, in Sunderland at the Corner Flag on October the 3rd. You could always break into the notion of, instead of the Senton bombs, actually be the Seam bombs or the Seam Harbour bombs. It's a local joke. I actually get that. It's the Seton Carew, just a thought there. And then, of course, down in London at the Fighting Cocks on October the 4th. Heaps of other stuff, of course. Facebook site, Senton Bombs. Website, of course, sentonbombs.com. Presumably you're tweeting and people can reach you via all the social media ways as well.
Yeah, we're on everything, so people can contact us, Twitter, Facebook. Obviously, our music's available to stream on Spotify. We've got a website, so yeah, you know, we're out there, so, you know, just got to Google us, basically. You'll find us.
There you go. And I'm sure that you'll be debuting as well on the Rock Train before too long with Kevin and company there, doing a whole range of factors. Listen, it's been great chatting to you, good self. It's certainly woken us up, which is brilliant stuff. We're off to chef extraordinaire and indeed culinary expert William Sitwell now. But have you had a recently interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Damien?
Yeah, I've had an absolutely fantastic time. Thank you very much for having us and taking time out of the show to speak to us and play the track. I very much appreciate it.
We've always appreciate the recommendations of Tony McDonough, even though he supports Sheffield Wednesday. He's a great Manila PR person, and clearly, you know, the message was right. And as ever, he's proven to come up trumps with the Senton Bombs. Damien Cage, we salute you. We'll speak again soon.
Okay, thank you very much. Take care.
You're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
Which is what many lucky people will have the opportunity to do. I hear the wondrous stories of William Sitwell in not one, not two, but three talks, plus the Althorp Food Festival, which he's just sent me an email link to at this moment in time. William, what magical things. And it's so good that we did the rehearsal a few days ago to know exactly what we're going to work our way through today. It's genius. Genius.
Do you know, there isn't... how many food festivals are there now in this country? Unbelievable. And indeed. So this is the latest one at... Princess Diana, mm-hmm. Her old home at Althorp. Her brother, Earl Spencer, Charles Spencer, lives there. And he has invited over 30 of Northamptonshire's finest food and drinks exhibitors, offering all of their stuff. He's got cafe in his stables. They've got pop-up food stalls, Mama Jack's, which is quite a cool local thing, and a thing called Spectacular Goat. And then I'm doing a talk.
It's just phenomenal. And I cannot believe tickets are mere £7. £7 for adults, with children aged 15 and under admitted free.
Amazing, isn't it? Amazing.
Astounding, still. The website, of course, for that being the wonderful Spence Althorp. .com, which will take you through to all details about the Althorp Food Festival and the Literary Festival and a whole heap of other bits and goodies. But not only that, William, I mean, not only will you be there at the Althorp Food Festival celebrating Northampton's finest, clearly, but talks as well in terms of the Edith Sitwell connection and more, presumably.
Yeah, I'm doing... There's a wonderful house called Holdenby, which also has a food festival about 3 miles away from Althorp. And... they've got something that people may think is an evening from hell. It's called An Evening With Me. And I'm doing two talks. I'm talking about Sitwells. So I'm talking about the story of Edith Sitwell, great poet, and her two brothers, and their extraordinary, eccentric father, who, among other things, he had these cows that used to graze in front of him in the field. And he commissioned an artist to stencil them in a Chinese willow pattern in order to try and improve them. And he also invented a revolver for killing wasps and an egg made of condensed milk. And then he wrote a whole lot of extraordinary books, including Modern Modifications on Lead and Jewelry in the Middle Ages, which I'm sure will appeal to you, and A History of the Fork. So he spawned these three extraordinary children who then went on to be amazing writers. So I'll be talking about them.
It's just wonderful. There? I was taken aback momentarily, William, by the thoughts of a mashup. I was just looking at Allthought, because in the expert talks, I see that you are top of the bill just ahead of Bear Wilderness and Survival, Techniques to Survive in the Wild, which I thought was interesting, you know. As William said, well, A History of Food in 100 Recipes, followed by Techniques to Survive in the Wild and the Importance of Bees. Genius.
Bees. Yes. And there's a rogue apostrophe. Have you noticed that?
I did.
The importance of bees something,
exactly.
Obviously.
Well, presumably the importance of bees, Sean Porter and Joanne Mannering, basically, health and nutrition experts. So what can I eat? And more. Wonderful stuff. How do you do it, William? How do you actually keep the publication that is the authentic and awesome Waitrose Food, Waitrose Kitchen, and so on?
We renamed it. It's called Waitrose Food. Well, you know, you multitask. You juggle, you try and keep things going. I'm 71,000 words into my next book, which is quite exciting. Just writing about how Lord Woolton opened all across the nation these canteens known as British restaurants. Mm. He was going to call them communal feeding centres, and Churchill sent him a memo, a rather rude memo, suggesting he change the name. He said, it is an odious expression suggestive of communism and the workhouse. I suggest you call them British restaurants. Everyone associates the word restaurant with a good meal. And by 1943, there were over 2,000 of them. He wanted to open about 10,000. But what it did is, you know, it fed people at midday across Britain. It was one way of coping with the ration.
And, of course, remained in place until the 1950s. And some people will actually look back and say, that's what we need now, a decent set of rationing to sort things out. We've covered a lot.
Well, that's the big epilogue to the book, really. You know, the fact that we were never as healthy as we were in those days. Yeah. Surprisingly enough, we've never eaten out until recent times. Until then, you might have thought, you know, the war and austerity actually, but Britain, I think in 1941, I think there were something like 79 million meals a week were eaten by civilians outside of their home, and it rose to 170 million by 1944, which means that. It's an average of 4 meals a week for every man, woman, child. So we ate out a lot in those days. But you're quite right. We were very healthy then, and it's hard though to impose rationing on a country that's not at war. So maybe we need to declare war on someone in order to solve our obesity problems.
It's not going to happen in the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, or indeed the Midweek Drive, even though it's been a wonderful reflection on Top 4. We had Ken Dodd, OBE, on the programme yesterday together with...
He's still alive.
He's alive and kicking, it has to be said. Indeed, an astounding individual. Still sort of rapidly going on. And indeed, of course, on tour. He's in Leicester over the weekend, so you might like to catch him up from that point of view. And then he has Darlington Civic Theatre and a whole heap of other things. Peter Miles, of course, who worked with Dusty Springfield. And when you were actually saying, I'm just at 71, I thought, it's 71,000 years old, surely, William, you haven't been with us that long. But no, it was words, actually. It's an odd sort of scenario from that point of view. Anyway, William, briefly, we need to mention, of course, Soho Radio, because otherwise the fans of Sitwell, of which there are a growing number in the village of Lincoln, will be devastated to say what's been happening as far as Soho Radio is concerned, and why should we tune in and download the podcasts?
Let me try and remember. We had John Turode on this week, so that's a good one. And if you retweet the link to the Mixcloud, you will win... You have to come up to London. You can win free flaming Ferraris at Nam Long, which is a bar that's been going for many years in South Kensington.
It just gets
but John Turode was in. He's got a book out called My Kind of Food, so we talked about his kind of food. And that was a good chat. Yeah, so if you go on Mixcloud, look for it, or look on my Twitter feed, and you might enjoy that show. Nope. I don't know who we've got on next week. It's a mystery.
It's a surprise. It's a mystery. You've got to keep the people working through that whole thing. A reminder, the Allthought Food Festival this coming weekend, the 25th and 26th. Well, actually, sort of Friday, really, it starts, 25th and 26th of September. So a Friday and Saturday package. We will be there next year, hopefully. It's this year. It's crazy. Last week, we were actually taking the delights of the North of England Horticultural Society's Autumn Flower Show at Harrogate. Sadly, no records broken in vegetables this time round, William, but there was a giant harvest of DNA for the Gigantamos, so I can see that Gigantamos could be very much amongst us in 2016 in terms of gigantic tomatoes, quite literally Gigantamos.
I wonder what you're talking about. Gigantic Tomatoes.
Exactly. You see, that's it, without apostrophes. It's important, so it's sort of messages put through there. Still to come on the programme, we'll be speaking to Anna Gibson about World Car-Free Day, which, of course, was Tuesday, and why Anna's mission is to get us all on scooters. Yeah. Plus, we'll be finding out from Alan Stevens what he made of the first Doctor Who Peter Capaldi latest episode, or the second, whatever, it's a by-the-by thing. The Doctor with a guitar, with shades, on a tank. Strange but true. I thought it was your good self, William, for a moment, but no, it was not.
I get around, but not that much.
We need the TARDIS. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yeah, nice and calm. I like it when you're not besieged with other people.
There you go. Well, hopefully you'll be back again next week for more magical Sitwell stuff. And a review, of course, of the All Thought Food Festival.
Yes, exactly. How did it go?
I know. Exactly. We'll do it all. Just lay here. Would you lie with me and just forget the world? One of the clear signs that the schools are back in full force is the advent of increasing cars and traffic on the road, etc., and the school run. But hopefully, with World Car-Free Day and a number of other factors, that might be gradually beginning to become a thing of the past. To address this and to talk about the superlative venture when it comes to transport of micro-scooters, we're delighted to welcome the co-founder of micro-scooters and indeed one of the ace women responsible for getting children and adults scooting. That'll be the fabulous Anna Gibson. How are you, Anna?
Hi, I'm fine, thanks. Good.
So, micro-scooting, it sounds as though it's acres of fun and a whole heap of other things, but looking at the facts for some of these scenarios, simply scooting a two-mile car journey, 1 mile there and back for just one day in a week, could save £175.
Yeah, and if you were to do it every day for the week, it could save you £400 a year. You know, it's fantastic, and it's just such a good way of getting... to the school. It's cheap, it's easy, it's great for the kids, good for the environment, and on car-free day, obviously it's something that we're trying to encourage people to do. You know, we set up micro-scooters 10 years ago, and in that time we've absolutely revolutionised the school run with hundreds of thousands of children and parents, as you say, scooting to school, and, you know, it makes it safer outside the school gates. You haven't got to worry about getting in the car. And, you know, we know for a fact that children, if they've done some exercise before school, is great for their concentration and it increases their levels of concentration.
From Clapham Common to Northumberland sounds like the title of an epic movie in itself, really. I'm sure that when they do the Anna Gibson life story, it might be a working title. But from that perspective, obviously developing something like World Car-Free Day, that's obviously quite a significant step up, obviously, from the British Isles to the globe.
Well... you know, Car-Free Day is an annual event which is celebrated across the world, and the whole point is that it's encouraging people to make their journey wherever it is to work or school and wherever they are in the country in a greener and healthier way just for one day. And the idea, I mean, obviously it's a shame it comes on what's possibly one of the wettest days of the year. We can't change that. But the idea is to encourage people to change their habits and to think about using other sustainable means of transport. You know, we've seen that on the school run, and you know, what we'd really like to see more and more people doing is parents scooting with their children on the school run and then commuters using it as part of their commute to work.
I've been a great believer and proponent of the importance of safety in bikes and cyclists in general, and I do think that oft times we seem to have situations where people still refuse to put their crash helmets on and so on. What are the safety precautions people need to take when they're in charge of a micro scooter?
Well, we do encourage children and adults, everyone, you know, regardless of age, we encourage them to wear a helmet. But, you know, like skiing or cycling, obviously everybody's got a choice and it's a matter of individual preference. But we would advocate everybody wearing a helmet. You know, at the end of the day, what's to lose? Absolutely nothing. You know, you might as well keep yourself safe.
Absolutely, I'm very critical in every sense of the word. Now, in terms of the benefits of scooting, what about folk would say, well, what about Shanks's pony, actually walking to school, or indeed simply cycling? Aren't they sort of better alternatives? Aren't they even greener? Or is that a case of, no, you can't replace the scooter?
Well, they're definitely not greener. But, and of course you can walk to school, but we know for a fact that it takes you 6 minutes to scoot the same distance as it takes you 20 minutes to walk. So there are all sorts of advantages in terms of using the scooter. And, commuters can fold them up. We've seen increasing number of folding bikes, but they're, quite cumbersome and quite heavy, whereas a scooter's lightweight. It's easy to fold up. You could put it in a luggage rack on a train and take it off the train at the other end of your journey and scoot the last bit. So, and in fact, it's why micro scooters were set up in the first place. The folding aluminium scooter was invented by a guy called a Swiss German called Wim Ubiter, who wanted to get more quickly to his favourite sausage shop. So it was too far to walk and too short a distance to take a car. And so he thought, wouldn't it be great if I could invent something that would enable me to get there quicker? And so he reinvented the folding aluminium scooter. And I think, there are lots of people who can use it in conjunction with commuting. And then, lunch breaks in terms of getting out and about on your scooter, you can go and see much better things and get much further.
Would you suggest that this is ideal for primarily urban transport, or clearly for folk who live in the country, maybe you have to combine taking your scooter part of the way and do a sort of park and scoot scheme?
Well, I mean, I think, it's great for both. Obviously, we've seen it in it's prolific in London, but for everybody outside London, of course, it's, everybody's still scooting to school, so that's a very real possibility. And if you've got to drive to school, if you live too far away, well, you can consider not parking outside the school gates, parking short of the school gates in a safer place and scooting the last bit of your journey. Or if you're, working in a different place and you've got to get on a train, take your scooter on the train and use it at the other end to get to wherever you've got to get to.
Are there regional differences? You mentioned obviously the popularity in London, but up in Northumberland, I tend to suggest that several folk there might be a little bit reticent to actually get onto the scooter.
Well, no, I mean, again, I know I keep coming back to the school run, but it's such a massive part of everybody's life. There are hundreds of thousands of kids getting to school, and most of the time the school isn't that far away. So increasingly we're seeing more and more people on scooters all around the country.
And we've also looked at some of those numbers of exercise, because scooting for 45 minutes burns an average of 350 calories an hour, which is pretty much around the equivalent of £1 a week weight loss, which isn't bad at all. So
great.
So good stuff there. Anna, finally, in terms of finding out more details, do we get in touch with Micromobility Switzerland? Do we contact yourself? What's the best way to find out more information for people who've been bitten by the scooting bug?
Absolutely. Well, you can visit our website, which is micro-scooters.co.uk, or phone our team of experts who are all based in Essex. But, on the website, we've got lots of information. We can tell you about all the different types of scooters that we sell and which scooter might be most appropriate for you. We run a Scoot Safe scheme. We run a Scooters for School scheme. And we've got information on family scooter routes around the country, which we've worked on in conjunction with Sustrans, which is a charity championing sustainable transport. So there's lots of information on there. And get out and scoot.
What a wonderful catchphrase to actually sort of wrap up the piece. Anna, it's been fabulous touching base with your good self. I take it you've had a reasonably interesting and not stress-free telephonic link with us today.
That's been great.
We look forward to speaking to you again. Anna Gibson, co-founder of the fabulous Micro Scooters. And you've heard it there. Get out and scoot. Many thanks indeed.
Thanks.
Well, I suppose it could catch on. What do you think, Alan Stevens? Get out and scoot? Do you scoot around?
I scoot around, but I don't use a scooter.
Ah, there you have it, you see. So, this is the moment. Every time a new series of Doctor Who launches, it's all very well talking to the likes of Graham Harper. It's all very well featuring Ken Dodd and indeed legendary folk like Peter Miles and getting their views on the episodes and so on. But fundamentally, the world awaits the audio views of the Stevens Meister, co-founder, of course, of CaldorCity.com. Alan, what have you made of part one, of course, of the latest incarnation of that rock star extraordinaire with his shades, his guitar, and, of course, his tank, the Doctor?
I thought it was all right. Yeah, I liked it.
There you have it. The Moffat household gives a sigh of relief in every sense of the word. It seems to have polarised folk, though, because we were speaking yesterday, and there are a number of folk who seem to find it appalling. Sam Stone, of course, of this very parish, ace author in her own routine, couldn't see the point of several folk and characters there, including, of course, the Brigadier's daughter, Kate Lethbridge-Stewart, and the overacting of Missy seemed to be a little case of gratuitous violence. But Peter was saying yesterday, wait and see, it could actually all open up. I think the other thing was the tank and the doctor certainly got the goat of Jessica Ward.
Who's Jessica Ward?
She's one of our Midweek Drive co-presenters. You've spoken to her before. She's from New Zealand. She'd be very hurt that you forgot who she was, but never mind.
What did she like about a tank?
Just couldn't understand why they actually would put it in there. You know, a tank and a rock star. It seemed to be out of kilter. I suggested possibly midlife crises or a variety of other things, but still, it's a different area.
Well, I think the thing is, the problem with all those, and I much admire Sam Stone and the various people you've mentioned. I remember them. I don't remember Sam Stone. I'm digging a hole here, aren't I? Let's start again.
Sam Stone is getting married to a certain David J. Howe. He's also
yeah, I know. Yeah,
that's okay.
No, Sam Stone is very well. In fact, I read a comment from Sam Stone recently on
Facebook, possibly.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was about Cameron. It just said, "I'm not surprised." So I thought, I think she must have been away and came back.
I think
and read something.
Yep, clearly.
I don't know what she read.
Let's not go into farmyard activities here, please.
Okay, fair enough. To be honest, you cannot judge anything until you've seen it all. I mean, I have, seen an episode of the programmes and all. Don't like that, but I always reserve judgment until I've seen both of it before then going in and tearing it limb from limb. So I really, I might watch a part two and think, no, that actually doesn't work. Because I actually quite enjoyed part one of, the Dalek story I did years ago, the other one with Davros. Was it
Destiny of the Daleks? Stolen Earth. Stolen Oath, right, yes.
Destiny of the Daleks. Stolen Earth during its end, and I actually really enjoyed Stolen Earth. But when you watched it all with Journey's End, you thought, "Nah, he was just making it up as he went along," and I wasn't very impressed about that. But I couldn't really make that decision until I'd seen part two. So all I can say at the moment is, it seemed okay. What would the problem? Someone had a problem with the tank. Well, I think there was an element of where I can't remember now, but it was because I was very, very busy, and so my mind hasn't been entirely on it. But wasn't there a threat to his life or something, or that he was going to die soon? He'd sent something out, and I suppose if you think, I'm going to die, you then write a list of all the things you want to do, don't you? All the things you want to do before you die. So, play a guitar, drive a tank.
A Gallifreyan bucket list is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that was the intention, wear shades, and in fact, he plays the guitar himself. He played the guitar himself. He was in a band. So, clearly, that was in the same way as Matt Smith had an episode where he played football.
Indeed.
He has an episode where he played guitar. So, I think you can get into situations where behind the scenes people say, "Hey, that's a great idea. Why don't we do this? Because, he did that." And you put it into a story. And if you're watching it, think, "Well, why is he doing that?" And it only makes sense if you know who the actor is or was actually party to the drunken pub discussion they had. So you ended up in Torchwood with a cyber woman punching a pterodactyl. But
now, I thought that was Chris Chibnall actually exercising his creative genius, really.
On the back of a beer mat.
There we
drunk.
Are.
So, yeah, but I kind of think that there was this, the idea set out was that his last will and testament had been sent out, and and he was basically doing his bucket list. He didn't say that, but that was the implication. And sometimes things become so sort of like fixed in people's minds concerning bucket lists and stuff that, you just think, well, that's what he's doing. I mean, that's what I assumed he was doing. But, of course, we haven't seen... I'm quite sure it isn't going to come back and explain the tank, but, it's difficult to judge a story on...
On 48 or 49 minutes. Or even,
absolutely right. Well, if half a story.
Yes,
the second thing is, Missy, I think actually she's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I was always very critical of the Master because he was a character. Mm-hmm. All elements of Doctor Who are formula to a degree, and you start off with a story, and then those elements in some form or other are repeated in the next story, and so on and so on. And if you have about 20 stories featuring that character, by, you know, after a very short time, the character becomes ridiculous. You know, he never wins. His plans become more and more bizarre. And then you have other certain things like, you know, there's like for example, the mask standing in a field dressed as a scarecrow for years, waiting for TARDIS to turn up. And you've got to ask yourself, why would he do something like that? And then if you look back at other stories, there's other stories where he's just waited for years for something to happen, but, you know, it becomes more and more ludicrous. It's justified by the fact it happened before, but in the context of the story they're now putting it in, it makes no sense. So I thought for years that the Master had become just some panto villain that didn't really make a great deal of sense. And then suddenly I think, you know, Moffat looked very, very hard at the Master and thought, how can I make this character actually work? And it does work, and I think it worked. I think it started to work with Missy. I don't mean it worked with John Sim, but it works with her. I think she's brilliant, to be honest. I'm very surprised to hear that, because everyone, I mean, the thing is, you do kind of live in a bubble. Peter Marlowe came and watched it with us on the weekend, and I put a few photographs up on the Facebook site, and I got again 16 new friends, and there was lots of people's names appearing on like stuff, which I'd never,
exactly.
I didn't even know.
it's the influence of the Miles Meister together with Caldor City.
That's right.
Phenomenal.
So the thing is, what you do is you do, in a way, you kind of live in a bubble, yeah. And there are people who absolutely loathe Moffat and all that stuff, but the general thing I've been seeing on my Facebook feeds, anyway, has been...
very positive.
Positive. Yeah, this was good. Let's hope, you know. I mean, the worst criticism I've seen is, are they going to screw it up next week like they normally do?
Exactly.
That was the worst criticism I saw. So I'm quite surprised to hear. What was your thing? Missy was over the top. There was a tank in it. There was a third thing, wasn't there?
I think possibly the gratuitous violence of her shooting people for a whim. But then again, you could probably
justify. But she's done that all the time.
Exactly.
In The Master. There used to be jokes made of death. I mean, yeah. There was a story... you know, going and shrink people and stuff, and going like cutting people down to size and all that stuff, wasn't it? You know, and he is a mass murderer. He triggered the entropy field, didn't he, in Legopolis, which killed billions.
Exactly.
Blew up Treacle. I mean,
the message is there, and on a show which launched with Helen Skelton, former BBC Blue Peter presenter, talking about letter writing for teenagers, Richard Fitzwilliams, Arthur Mackenzie, Ian Lennox, Damien from the Senton Bombs, William Sitwell, Abigail Ross, Anna Gibson, and Alan Stevens. Alan, have you had a reasonably interesting telephone link with us on the programme today?
Yeah, sure, yeah. I didn't know it was coming along, actually.
I've got
all that.
Sorry. It was the second part, you know, second part to the first part last
what
night.
What did Graham Harper think of it?
With Peter Miles. Didn't we have a chat? Well, you can download the podcast and find out. It's under Ken Dodd, OBE, Doctor Who and American Treats. I've sent you the link, even while we've been speaking. It's phenomenal. Are you back again next week to talk about part two?
Yeah, sure.
Hurrah! If you
well,
that would be next Thursday.
Same time, like
a Saturday evening slot, isn't it? Thursday, round about sort of 9:45.
Saturday evening slot on Thursday morning.
Exactly. That's the sort of message. Genuine time travelling. Alan Stevens, we salute you. We'll speak again soon. As far as Siren's concerned, music coming up after the news from the Sky News Centre. Then we've got the alternative lunch at 1 o'clock, drive time at 5, Inspired on Air at 7, and the Rock Train at 8, followed by the Spoiler podcast at 10. That's it. Alan, would you like to say farewell?
Farewell.